Uncommon Commons is a horror anthology podcast written and recorded by George Plank and Alex Vitale. Content warnings can be found in the episode description.
One of today's stories is called Sick Jams, written by George Plank.
And Spirit Savants, written by Alex Vitale. Huh.
Were you expecting applause?
Kinda, yeah.
No, you can't join in.
Oh.
Who's Lucy?
Not me.
Moving on.
Doesn't it feel good to be back, Jane?
What do you mean, back? We haven't left, we can't.
I mean back, together, here, in the common area, DM.
It's been like 8 hours since I last saw you.
Yeah, I know, but it's nice to have company I can see.
That you can see? As opposed to what? Invisible company?
Yeah. Ghosts.
Ghosts?
Yeah, like the one that lives in my apartment. Lives? Unlives. Exists. Exists in my apartment.
John, you do not have ghosts in your apartment.
Sure I do. He exists in my fridge.
John, you lived in your fridge for a while.
And I personally have never felt crisper.
Let's say for a moment that I believe you, which I don't. How do you know that you have a ghost in your apartment?
Well, for starters, every morning when I wake up, there's a mysterious warm spot on my pillow.
John, that's your head warming the pillow. At least I hope it is.
Oh yeah? And how come the other side is nice and cool then? Riddle me this, Jane. Ghosts!
Oh yeah, you got me there. What a fool am I. What other evidence you got?
Well, sometimes, when I go to put on socks, one of them is missing.
That's a pretty universal thing, John. As far as ghost stories go, that's pretty lame.
Oh yeah? Then maybe this'll change your mind.
What is that?
Actual, documented evidence of spooky ongoings provided by an anonymous source.
You got that out of the mail, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, yeah. It was Tuesday. Because on any other day, Treasure Valley Thrift would have been more dead than the people they got the majority of their merchandise from. But Tuesdays were special. On Tuesdays, everything in the store was half off, with the unofficial official motto of, out with the old stuff, in with the new old stuff. Dozens upon dozens of people poured in, going through racks of clothes, sorting through countless books by 12 different authors, and trying to find the elusive beanbag bear that would complete their collection once and for all. Trevor was one such person, and while he personally had no interest in beanbag bears, he had his own collection that he was trying to build. But, to his dismay, it was getting harder and harder to find audio cassettes in the wild. Granted, by all accounts, the format was officially dead. No one, except for a particular type of band, even released music on that format anymore. Trevor wouldn't quite use the word hipstery to describe them, but that sure didn't stop others from using that term when describing Trevor. There was just something about those crazy little tapes that he just thought was neat, which is why he found the whole thing fascinating. The generational divide, he thought, was the biggest when people were asked if they knew how to burn a disc. Those that could were curating custom playlists and eventually made the transition perfectly when music went all digital. Meanwhile, everyone else was wondering what was wrong with their mixtapes. Because of this, Trevor felt that many things that were recorded on tape never successfully crossed that bridge, and there were many hidden treasures to dig up. But the only thing Trevor had coming up was a lot of nothing. Towers of compact discs threatened to topple over at a moment's notice, and if it ever did, it might very well spell doom for any poor bystander who happened to be in its direct path. He dug around for what felt like hours. When he came up with a grand total of 3, he felt both pride and disappointment in knowing that he may have just found the last 3 the store had and possibly would ever take. With that in mind, he took his treasures up to the front. He paid a grand total of 40 cents after taxes. The entire drive home, he spent thinking about what could be on the tapes. Despite his personal affinity for the format, his car only accepted CDs and the occasional aux cord. So, his imagination would have to suffice. The label on the first tape read, 1992 Need Park Pleasant Memories Parade. The case wore a grainy photo of a group of costumed characters walking towards the camera, with a mountain looming ominously in the background. He imagined it was probably going to be the score to a parade thrown at the park. Would there be singing or just music? Only time would tell. The second tape he found was one he almost thought about leaving behind. He normally wasn't into religious music, but when he saw the range of these options, he decided to take all three. He didn't have anything personal against the Flock Pasture Chorale, but he doubted he was their target audience. The last tape presented the biggest mystery of all. It had no art on the sleeve, save for a piece of lined paper with a few names and numbers that Trevor assumed to be minute markers. The tape itself was brightly colored, like so many were in the late 80s, early 90s, and written on a thin piece of masking tape on the flat surface of the tape were the words Megamix, written in a bold tip permanent marker. Underneath that was written 1986 through, and then another year that had been smeared out and maybe lost to time. Trevor could absolutely not get home fast enough. He tore down the road, and when he arrived, he made a beeline for the door, stopping only once he remembered that he left the tapes in his front seat. His apartment wasn't much to look at from the inside, or the outside. Trevor never bought any expensive furniture or cookware. He had no need when he had everything he ever wanted. Every paycheck, every dollar earned, went right into his hi-fi setup. He toggled a few switches and adjusted the volume dial. The speakers hummed almost imperceptibly, but to Trevor, it was like a symphony in itself. He grabbed a tape at random and he started listening. As expected for this tape, the Flock Pasture Chorale featured a miasma of voices all singing in unison. Bits of dirt were picked up by the tape's magnetic contacts, causing small scratches to show up in the audio from time to time. While some of the songs seemed to be higher energy than others, they all followed the same theme. We are lowly and worthless, and the shepherd is great. As with every new tape, he listened to both sides. Partially out of respect for the artist, who may never be heard again, but mostly to make sure it was fully rewound should he ever choose to listen to it again. He put the case back on the tape and added it to one of several drawers made in the 70s with the express purpose of holding audio cassettes. Another great thrift store find at only $5 a set. He took a sidelong glance at his dwindling pile of new cassettes. Theme park stuff is very popular online these days, he thought to himself. So he might as well save it for last in case he wanted to make a blog post about it or upload something to WTube. He grabbed the brightly colored Megamix and checked the contacts. There was no dirt or mold to be seen, and the little sponge that somehow goes missing from a lot of older tapes was still intact. He popped it on side A. As the spools turned, the hiss from the tape came loud and clear through the speakers. Trevor couldn't quite explain why, but that sound always felt nostalgic and warm. Suddenly a recording cut in. Some wooden floorboards creaked under the weight of heavy footsteps. It sounded as if a group of people were walking through an old house together. Occasionally, one of them would take a deep breath, as if they had been holding it in for quite some time. Maybe it had been a mixtape at one point, but someone recorded over it, Trevor thought. Did you hear that? One of the people on the tape said.
Hear what?
A woman's voice responded. A moment or two passed. Nothing. I just thought I heard. A crash came from somewhere else. The people on the tape audibly gasped, and the cadence of their steps picked up.
It just got really cold,
the woman said.
Do you think?
You're the one with the EMF reader. What does it say?
It's dead.
Well, that's just great. Now what are we... What are those? Why are they looking at us? The woman let out a blood-curdling scream, and a camera flash could be heard before whatever tape deck that had been recording was dropped to the ground. The tape clicked, indicating the end of side A. Trevor still wasn't sure what to make of the tape so far. Dutifully, he flipped the tape over and pressed play. He was immediately granted to the sound of birds chirping somewhere in the distance. Groups of people were walking down the sidewalk. By Trevor's best guess, the tape had been used to gather field recordings and ambient noise. Through the left speaker, Trevor heard the sound of two women gossiping at a nearby table.
Did you hear about Sandy?
Yeah, it's sad. But what can you do?
How do you think Tommy will take the news?
He's a big boy. It won't be easy, but he'll...
Their conversation was cut abruptly short by a loud metal sound, which, by Trevor's best guess, could have been a car accident. People screamed and ran both away and towards the sound. Trevor stopped the tape, a little shaken. He would need to take a moment to clear his head. Did he accidentally come across a snuff tape? Would he have to take it to the police? His mind was swimming with questions. He stood up, grabbed his keys, and headed to the door. A walk. That's what he needed to clear his head, a walk. A little fresh air, some exercise would do wonders for him. There was a little coffee shop a little ways down the road from him. He would pop in, get a macchiato, and then walk back home. And hopefully by that point he would know just what to do next. It was a beautiful day. The sun was shining down, making him glad he chose to wear a short-sleeved shirt instead of his usual hoodie. A group of birds flew overhead. Their red bellies made Trevor think that they might be a group of robins. He didn't know a lot of birds, but he could identify a robin if he had to. The outside of the cafe was unassuming enough. It had a simple brick and a black and white sign with purple accents that read, Poppy Seed Cafe. Situated in the middle of a small shopping street, it saw mostly foot traffic. Outside was a small patio section with a couple sets of wrought iron tables with chairs to match. He went in, chatted with the friendly barista behind the counter, got his drink, and tipped generously. The staff there was always so friendly. As he left, the bell rang, and he stepped around the two women who were now seated on the patio.
How do you think Tommy will take the news?
He's a big boy.
Trevor's nose wrinkled in confusion before his eyes widened in recognition. He heard the woman start a thought she would never finish, as a moment later a white sedan barreled into the pedestrian-filled shopping street before wrapping itself around a light pole. The sound lasted for only a moment, but the car was irreparably folded over on itself. From where he stood, Trevor was unable to see the driver. Everywhere people screamed, and some ran away while others ran up, looking to help in some capacity. Trevor, however, just stood there, transfixed in place by the shock of it all. He almost didn't realize when he yelled, "The tape!" at full volume, and started running down the street, homeward bound. He swung open his door and practically threw himself at the hi-fi. He jammed on the rewind and waited as impatiently as possible for the click indicating that his waiting was over. The tape was the same as before.
Did you hear about Sandy?
Yeah, it's sad,
but what can you do?
How do you think Tommy will take the news?
He's a big boy.
It'll be easy, but he'll... Then came the crash. But instead of instinctively jamming on the stop button, he listened on to hear another voice ring through the screaming crowd. The tape! Trevor slumped back onto the floor and listened, dumbfounded to the resulting chaos. He didn't know how, but he was convinced of the impossible fact that this tape somehow had a recording of an event that happened mere moments ago. When he heard the click, his hands raced to the eject button. Maybe the other side was also hyper-relevant, and he just didn't know it yet. He flipped it over and pressed play. On the other side was a recording of a mother and son visiting a theme park. As far a departure from the other recording as possible. As improbable as it was, he had already crossed the impossible threshold several times today. Once again, the machine clicked and he flipped it over. For a few crucial seconds, the only sound leaving the speakers was the hiss generated by the tape, before someone's voice cut in.
Oh, I just want to say, on behalf of the company, we've seen the hard work you're doing, and we just want to say, congratulations, Trevor.
There was a smattering of applause before. Click. Trevor knew that voice. Where did he know that voice? He tried to press eject, but the button jammed hard in its slot. After a while, alone with the tape deck and a flathead screwdriver, he managed to pry the button back into its normal position and eject the tape. That was too close for comfort, he thought to himself. He checked the time and realized he had been at it a lot longer than he realized. He pulled the tape out and slipped it snugly into his front shirt pocket. A rogue thought crossed his mind for a moment. Would he even be up at this hour? He opened up his laptop to his most frequented tape enthusiast forum, Deckheads, with a Z. A little dot on the window in the bottom right corner blinked green. Oh good, he's on. Trevor considered him one of his closest friends, despite never meeting in person and knowing him only as his screen name. Worm. Got a minute? Yeah, of course, Worm replied. What's up? I got this tape from a thrift store, and it's pretty weird. Weird like Lithuanian math rock, or... No, I think it predicts the future. Okay. Just okay? You're right, that is weird. Can you send a pic of the tape? Yeah, sure. He snapped a quick pic and sent it over. My first impulse is late 80s, early 90s. Yeah, I thought so too. I'll see what I can find. Great, thanks. You got it, my guy. Worm disconnected. Trevor yawned and stretched. Ugh. He had had enough excitement for a lifetime. He went to bed in surprisingly good spirits. As he drifted off to sleep, he could swear he heard the hiss of the tape echoing through the apartment. The blaring of his alarm jolted him awake. He checked his phone. He only had a few moments to spare before he had to head off to work. He brushed his teeth, threw on a sweater, and checked his phone one more time. Despite all his hopes, Worm hadn't gotten back to him yet. He patted the front pocket of his shirt, making sure that he had it close, and left the house for the day. Work was the same as it always was. Calls in, calls out, and plenty of paperwork to go around. Around noon, word went around that they were having cake in the conference room. He finished up one last call before joining the others. Fortunately for him, there was still plenty of cake to go around. A large white banner draped between two windows read, "Happy Retirement, Bill." Bill had been with the company for several decades now, and wore that time like a badge of honor. His years of service were etched into his face, and yet even now he wore a very professional smile at the head of the conference room table.
Ahem!
Mr. Tabb, the regional manager, cleared his throat. Everyone turned their attention to him standing next to Bill.
I would just like to say a few words about one of our most trusted members, Bill Davis. Bill has been working here for 47 years. In that time, he has never been late, nor has he received any complaints about his behavior. Except maybe for all the young ladies whose hearts Bill breaks on the regular.
A polite amount of laughter followed.
We could never ask for a better branch manager. And we know he's leaving some pretty big shoes to fill. To Bill!
To Bill! The entire room roared in chorus.
Now this is still very much Bill's party, but business must go on. Which is why, after much deliberation, we've chosen a prospect to fill in Bill's stead after today. So I just want to say, on behalf of the company, we've seen the hard work you're doing, and we just want to say, congratulations, Trevor.
There was a smattering of applause as Trevor smiled in pleasant surprise. He moved his hand over his heart and squeezed the edges of the tape. This was it. The moment he heard before. He looked around the room. Strange, the clapping didn't look so sarcastic on the recording. In fact, more people looked annoyed than not. He went up to the front and shook the manager's hand before posing for a photo of himself and Bill side by side. He looked at the photo on the secretary's phone and realized he would have to work on his customer service smile. The rest of the day was a whirlwind of congratulations and pats on the back from people he hadn't ever talked to before. He moved his stuff into his new corner office and took until the end of the day to settle in. When he returned home, he swung the door closed with a flourish. He fished the tape out of his pocket and kissed it. He popped it into the tape deck and pressed play.
12. Five,
this time, 15, Side A seemed 13, to be a broadcast ripped directly
five,
from the radio.
Nine, 14,
some broadcaster nine, was reading numbers and becoming seemingly more and more uncomfortable 14, with each passing 20, moment.
20, 15,
Side A never applied five, to him anyway, so Trevor pressed the fast forward and waited for the eventual click. He flipped the tape and waited with bated breath for what awaited him next. The hiss of the tape came through loud and clear before he heard someone running and panting.
Hey, Bill!
Hey! That was his voice. Definitely, he had messed around with enough recording equipment to pick his voice out of a crowd if he had to. Then why did hearing his voice here make him feel so uncomfortable? What was he doing? Why was he running? Trevor listened closely to find some answers.
Wait, Bill!
The tape crawled to a halt as Trevor's nostrils were assaulted by a sweet yet foul smell. Thick black smoke started to waft out of the hi-fi. No, 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 no! Trevor unplugged the machine. The tape! He jammed on the eject button, opening the hatch, but also recessing the button into the console. He pulled the tape from his accidental smoke machine. Some of the tape had become unspooled from the cassette, but after a thorough investigation, that was an issue that could be fixed with a number two pencil. He placed the tape into his shirt pocket before disconnecting the machine from the speakers and other stereo equipment. He knew just who to take this to. She was the only person in town who specialized in this type of equipment. If anyone could fix it, she could. When he arrived at her shop, he was shocked to find a note on her door saying the shop had been closed due to lack of interest. Trevor checked his phone. There were no other tape deck repair shops in the city. In need of a specific piece of hardware, he did the only thing someone in his position could do. He checked the thrift stores. In total, he went to 13 different thrift stores, and they all said the same thing. Yeah, we're not taking those anymore. He sat on the curb, holding the tape and eyeing it over and over again. The bright neon pinks and greens were so vibrant and eye-catching. The longer he stared, the more his mind raced. What secrets could the tape be hiding from him? He just had to know. He just had to. His front pocket buzzed. He checked it and saw he had a message from Worm.
Okay,
Got the intel. This particular tape was made by a software company in Japan under a line of products Mirai no Mikusu. What does that mean? He typed back. I don't know. I don't speak Japanese. Worm replied. Did you learn anything else? Not really. Everything else that comes up when I search for that particular brand ends up with urban legends and creepypasta type stories. Sounds like a fun listen. Wish I could. My hi-fi blew out. Ah, sucks to suck. Worm was right. At that moment, it really did. If only, he thought, his car played tapes instead of CDs. But then he would have to drive an older car. Just then, he saw a car coming to a stop at the intersection. It looked to have been late 90s in make. He got up from the curb and started to move closer. As he approached, he saw Bill behind the wheel of the car. He waved his arms and tried to get his attention. Hey, Bill! Bill didn't seem to notice. The light was going to change at any moment, so he ran up and rapped his fingers on the window. Bill looked over and rolled down his window. He flashed a smile at Trevor, but Trevor didn't care. He looked past Bill towards his center console. There it was. A rectangular slot with a single button to eject the tape once all was said and done. Trevor pulled the tape out of his pocket. Bill, I need you to... At that moment, the light changed, and Bill's winning smile disappeared from his face. He reached over to roll the window up, but Trevor caught his hand before he had the chance. Let go of me! Bill demanded. Just wait, it'll only take a moment. Help! Trevor's hands moved with a volition that seemed to be all their own. He moved Bill's hand out of the way before delivering a punch that caused Bill to pass out. Surely, he thought, if Bill knew what was on the tape, he would do the same. He pressed the tape into the slot and it clicked into place. Trevor cranked the knob on the console to max. By this point, people had started honking their horns, wondering what the holdup was. The familiar hiss came through the car's speakers, and for a moment it seemed like that was all that would come out. Trevor coughed, and a split second later he heard the same cough echoed on the tape. What? What? His grim present was being reflected to him in beautiful analog stereo sound. Before he had heard him on the tape, he heard the sirens of the police cars pulling up to the intersection. They saw Trevor. They saw Bill. And they connected the dots. Wait, you don't understand.
Wait, you don't understand.
The tape continued to parrot the events as they happened until the very last police car pulled away. The tape turned over to side A with a satisfying...
Wow, you sure proved me wrong. What solid, founded evidence. I particularly liked all of your sources. What was that citation format? Chicago? MLA?
Now you're just making up words, Jane. MLA doesn't mean anything.
It does if you're an English major.
What does the British infantry have to do with this?
I don't think I want to acknowledge what you just said.
Oh, like you could come up with a better ghost story then.
Oh, gosh! You're right! Where on earth would I ever find... Never mind, got one right here. The Albertine Hotel. Built in 1903 by Francis M. Albertine, eccentric millionaire and notorious big game hunter. The hotel stood for well over 100 years and has an extensive history from grand balls and weddings to kitchen fires and suicides. It stands to reason that it would have a fair share of ghost stories to tell. That's how it earned its title, Most Haunted Hotel on the East Coast. I motion to Liam to cut the camera and walk out of frame as he does so. If this footage isn't good, we could just use B-roll. I'll do a voiceover. Liam uses his sleeve to wipe off the screen of the camera. It'll be good. It better be. The Albertine Hotel stands in front of us, its frame seeming to bend and warp a little in the heat. A mirage, I think they call it. It's kind of creepy, and in the back of my mind, I hope that it's visible on camera. Come on, man. Let's get inside before our shoes start melting into the sidewalk. I cross the road, not waiting for Liam. He follows soon enough, though, and neither of us bother waiting for Tuna. She's probably still in the van anyways. She likes to take her time getting the equipment ready. The doors to the hotel open with a burst of sweet, frigid air, and I met with the most blessed feeling in the world. After a 5-hour car ride down from South Carolina, with no AC, you probably smell rank to the posh crowd milling around us. There's a bunch of people, older folks mostly. Old money, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn types. They eye Liam and I as we walk through the front door, warily watching our filming equipment. Then, the ones that bother to look up at us go back to sipping their dry martinis. A round, fussy-looking woman bumbles over to us. She has her hair cut into a tight bob, one that gives her a pinched, stuck-up sort of look. From the poorly masked glare that she throws in our direction, I'm guessing that's precisely the point. She holds a clipboard in her hand with a grip tight enough to punch holes through it. The corners of her mouth twitch ever so slightly upwards as she greets us. Hello, hello, you must be... Pinchy Face looks down at her clipboard. Spirit Savants, is that right? That's us, I reply. Even I can hear how strained my voice is. You're later than you said you'd be. Car trouble? Traffic. You could have called. I open my mouth to reply, patience wearing thin, but Liam puts his hand on my shoulder and speaks for me. We didn't have reception, I'm afraid. I apologize for the delay. We're still really excited for the opportunity. Pinchy Face breaks eye contact with me to look at Liam. Yes, you're lucky. We're very busy here, you know. Oh, I'll bet, Liam says, genuinely. I've heard so much about the Albertine. Y'all have quite the history. I'm really excited to see it for myself. Pinchy Face's features soften almost imperceptibly, and she puffs up a little in pride. Yes, we are one of the most notable historic landmarks in the state. We pride ourselves on our background and image. You're very lucky to be here indeed. It's at this point that Tuna walks in the front door. She stands out starkly against the elegant, old-world vibe of the foyer, with her fishnets and combat boots and shirt that shows just a little too much cleavage. She balances her equipment in her arms, speed-walking over to us from across the mahogany floor. Hey guys, sorry about the wait. Everything is functional, though. Tuna extends her arms to show off the array of ghost-hunting equipment gathered there. She doesn't seem to notice the horrified expression that Pinchy Face wears. The hotel manager recovers quickly, though, and tucks a loose strand of hair behind her ear. Is this your whole team, then? Yeah, I answer, side-eyeing Tuna. From here, I can smell that she's just eaten lunch, as the faint, salty smell of canned fish wafts off her. I was hoping she'd wait until after filming. She catches me looking and offers an oblivious smile. I look away. We were thinking of starting in the stairwell. I've heard... You'll be starting here, interrupts Pinchy Face, tapping a manicured nail on her clipboard. Room 425. Tuna goes rigid beside me, and if her face could have gotten any paler, I'm sure it would have. Isn't that the one that just... It doesn't matter. Pinchy Face is two for two on the interruptions so far, but she doesn't seem interested in apologizing. You'll start there, because no one is scheduled to stay in that room for another week. We're changing out the mattress. Bedbugs? I ask, a little too loudly. A few heads perk up around the open foyer. Liam elbows me in the side. Pinchy Face's cheeks turn a funny shade of purple-red, and she raises her voice as she speaks. I can assure you, Mr. Healer, that there are no bedbugs in this establishment. The mattress was just old, and we pride ourselves on keeping everything renovated, updated, and safe for our guests. Now, if you'll follow me... She doesn't give us time to regroup before she heads for the elevator. A sympathetic desk clerk gives us a pitying smile as we pass by him. I can't help but feel that there's relief in that smile as the elevator doors lock his manager in with us. It's cramped in there, and Liam elbows me again. I think it's an accident this time. He's trying to adjust something on the camera. Tuna looks like she'd rather be elsewhere, and I think that I also wish she were elsewhere. Before long, though, the bell chimes and we step out onto the fourth floor, following Pinchy Face down the hall in a single-file line. The door she stops at looks exactly like all the others, save for the number denoting it. She whips out a ring of keys and wiggles a skeleton key into the lock. The door swings open to an utterly unremarkable room. Nice, I suppose, if old-fashioned. Definitely not my style. We all file into the room, too. All except for Tuna, who mutters some shoddy excuse for fixing some of her equipment before she can join us. I guess she works up her courage rather quickly, because she steps through the door a minute later and shuts it behind her. Liam starts the camera. Here we are, in the infamous room 425. I address the camera. Just 2 years ago, 26-year-old Ruby Maltzman was murdered in cold blood, right here in this very room. Some say you can still see the bloodstain in the carpet. You most certainly cannot, shrieks Pinchy Face. Liam motions for me to keep going. Some say that her spirit still haunts this room, looking for revenge on her killer. Today we're here to find out for certain. As always, I'm Derek Healer, your host, and you're watching Spirit Savants. At this point, Tuna brings over one of her little contraptions and sets it on the table. Liam sets the camera on her, and I walk over to join her. We're here with... I need to stop myself from saying the wrong name. Ellen Gerard, our resident ghost-hunting tech specialist. What are you setting up here, Elle? She looks up at the camera wide-eyed and spooky, like she always does. I think it's her natural state of being. This is our spirit box. It will help us to communicate with... She pauses, swallowing. With Ruby. She stops suddenly and waves for Liam to cut the camera, which he does. What the hell, man? Come on, put the cameras back on. Liam ignores my demand. You okay, Elle? He asks instead. It takes a moment for Tuna to respond. This just feels wrong. It's different when we're talking to people who've been dead for a while, but I mean, she still has a family out there. Friends. Oh, for Christ's sake. I snatch the spirit box off the bedside table and turn it on. It blares static and Ellen covers her ears. Leah, would you just film already? Instead of listening to me, he sets down the camera and gently pulls the box from my hands. The look he gives me makes me feel like a scolded child, and only succeeds in making me angrier. When he switches it off, I grab the camera off the bed and make a beeline for the door. Fine. You two do whatever you want. If I'm the only one who gives a damn about our ratings, I'll go film by myself. For good measure, I grab the box from Liam's hand and march out the door. But not before I notice Tuna tearing up. Crocodile tears. I'm halfway down the hall to the elevator before I notice that Pinchy Face has followed me. The clicking of her frumpy work heels is muffled by the carpeted floor, and I don't realize she's there until she speaks. What about the show? What about it? She pauses, thinking as I slow to a halt. The reason I agreed to this silly business in the first place is because I knew it would be good publicity. Are you going to do the show here or not? I wanted to until those two clowns blew it, I snapped. Her voice was getting on my nerves, and so was her face. Pinchy Face thinks about something for a moment, and just as I'm about to head back to the van, she says, You mentioned the stairwell. I don't believe there are any ghosts there, but it's worth a shot to take a look, right? Just to be certain. I regard her for a moment. What the hell? What do I have to lose? Sure. She beckons me to follow her. The stairwell is down the other end of the hall, and the manager makes no attempt at keeping a slow pace. She winds down the hall and doesn't bother holding the door open for me either. The stairway itself is empty and drab compared to the rest of the hotel. What fantastic footage this will make. You can set that little box thing here. She points to the railing of the staircase. Some people have reported a hanging ghost here, but I don't recall any record of such a death. I roll my eyes and follow her finger. The ledge is just wide enough to hold the spirit box, and I pray to whatever god there is that it doesn't fall. Tuna would have my hide. I can hold the camera for you, if you'd like. Pinchy Face preens a little, adding loftily. I did the filming for a number of our commercials, you know. When was that? 1973? Her face drops, but she holds out for the camera expectantly. I hand it over. After a little fumbling, she gets it recording. Here we are, in the stairwell of the Albertine Hotel. Though no records of any deaths in this area have existed. Some people claim... Hey, wait, what are you do? Pinchy Face rushes at me, her features scrunched in a mix of emotions that I can't recognize. Before I realize what's happening, my feet are over my head and I'm falling backwards. The last thing I see is a spirit box, still perched neatly on the railing. I awaken with a splitting migraine and a pain in my neck that feels like all my bones have splintered. But as soon as it's there, it's gone. I'm vaguely aware that I'm lying on some stairs, and even more vaguely aware that someone is standing over me. Oh, good! Comes the flat, humorless voice of Pinchy Face. You're awake. I slowly pull myself up, squirming on the steps until I'm able to stand. What? You know, I really didn't want to keep any of you. We don't really like your sort here, she says snippily. I become aware that we're at the bottom of the stairwell. Pinchy Face turns her back on me and starts walking to the door. But then I thought that your, shall we say, colleagues might be better off without you. She opens the door to the exit and walks through it. They did seem a tad worried when I told them you'd run off. Not to worry, though. They got plenty of footage. I'm told the episode will air soon. My head feels a little light as I try to keep up with her dizzying words. Just as she's about to shut the door, she adds, Maybe they'll even do a follow-up episode. now that there's a ghost in the stairwell.
Now do you believe in ghosts, Jane?
No. There is no evidence to suggest that ghosts exist. Why is the lamp floating towards us?
Oh, yeah, Frederick likes to move my furniture around from time to time.
You should have mentioned that first. Way to bury the lead, John.
Hey, Freddy.
Hi.
Didn't it used to just be us in this apartment building?
Oh, yeah. Isn't this so much better?
No, I have so many more questions. How did he get here? When did he get here? How did you know his name was Frederick? How did he die? Hey, wait a minute. No, why is there music playing? Stop it. I'm still talking. I still have questions. Hey.
Uncommon Commons is a podcast. It is written and recorded by George Plank and Alex Vitale. Our logo was designed by Sam Vitale, and our theme song was written by Charles Adam Robinson. Special thanks to Worm for tweeting about the show. If you want to hear your name featured in a story, tweet about the show using the hashtag UncommonCommons. If we see it, we might just include you in a future episode. A special thank you to all of our patrons, including Noel San and our very own social media manager, Rebecca Tewksbury. For $5 a month, you can get a shout-out right here at the end of the episode, but for $1 a month, you get access to all of our bonus content. Like and review us wherever you get podcasts, and connect with us on social media using the links below. Stay, and remember, nothing is real.